Hi, this is Kathy, and I'll be reading the Salem News for Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. Salem Schools eye 32 job cuts. The school committee is faced with a proposed budget that would cut the equivalent of nearly 32 positions in the city's schools to address a $4.7 million budget gap in the new fiscal year. District officials say the budget gap is primarily driven by rapidly rising utility and transportation costs, as well as increases in personnel costs recently negotiated in a collective bargaining agreement that have raised pay for teachers, paraprofessionals, and administrators. Overall, personnel costs for the district's 890 employees makes up about 78% of the total budget and will increase by nearly 6% next year to a total of $64.05 million. The average salary for teachers will be $95,601, up from $88,656 this year. Of the 31.8 positions to be cut, 19 are a result of merging the district's two smallest elementary schools, Carlton and Saltonstall, into the new Sarah Parker Remen School at the Saltonstall building. As in recent years, this budget reflects difficult but necessary decisions, including position reductions and the strategic use of grants and recurring revenue to achieve balance, Interim Superintendent Kate Carbone said. Throughout developing this budget proposal, our focus has remained on preserving and prioritizing the student experience, both in the positions we have added and those that we've had to reduce, Carbone said. This means that when faced with making reductions, we tried to make them as far away from the supports that students would experience directly. Of the 19 elementary school positions to be reduced in the merger, it's estimated that about 9 people will leave the district and others will assume different roles. These reductions include a building substitute, 3 classroom teachers, 2.5 paraprofessionals, a multilingual teacher, physical education teacher, special education teacher, half of a special education reading specialist position, a City Connects coordinator, clerk, custodian, 2 assistant principals, an art intervention teacher, and a literacy coach. Additional cuts district-wide and within the central office include 3 family engagement facilitators, 3 multilingual coaches, a student nurse, a special education teacher, central office clerk, and a district-wide teacher whose role is being converted to be a behavior specialist. The Sarah Parker Remen School will have 3 inclusion special education teachers and 5 substantially separate classrooms with their own specialized staff. Reductions to multilingual staff were made in response to declining multilingual enrollment, which on October 1st had decreased by 32 students, or 4.5%, officials said. Non-personnel costs, which make up 22% of the budget and include transportation, utilities, and curriculum, are projected to increase by 19%. Utility costs will increase by about 5%, while transportation expenses will increase by 18%. These increases, while more modest than previous years, when paired with known salary commitments, continue to outpace available revenue, according to officials. The elementary schools merger is the most significant factor in reducing the projected budget gap and is expected to reduce costs by $1.7 million for fiscal year 27. This year, Salem's overall enrollment was 3,889 students, an increase of 58 students, or 1.5%, from the previous year. Salem saw an increase in the number of students with disabilities by 6% and a decrease in the numbers of multilingual students of 4.5%. Enrollment numbers have allowed the district to assume a level of state aid similar to previous years, which accounts for 39% of the total general fund budget, according to the district. In January, with the release of the governor's budget proposal, Chapter 70 state aid for Salem would be $32.9 million, an increase of $1.95 million. A public hearing will be held at Collins Middle School and via Zoom on April 13th at 6 p.m. for a public comment on the proposed budget before the school committee votes on the budget at its next meeting, April 27th. Comments can also be submitted online to spsbudget@salemk12.org. AI recycles. Republic Services plant reopens on Route 1 with faster sorting technology. Republic Services celebrated the reopening Tuesday of its 54,000 square foot recycling facility on Route 1, where artificial intelligence technology is now being used to sort through the North Shore's recycling waste. The facility at 109 Newberry Street was largely closed in 2025 for about a year to undergo renovations and be outfitted with this new technology. The changes will now allow Republic to sort through 35 to 40 tons of recycling waste an hour at the site, up from about 20 tons before. This gives the company double the capacity to sort through and process recycling from local communities, diverting more recyclable waste from landfills, said Republic General Manager Brian Skahan. Sustainability is in our DNA at Republic Services, Skahan told municipal officials from around the region who visited the plant Tuesday. We are fully committed to providing sustainable solutions for our customers throughout the greater Boston area. More efficient facilities like this will help Massachusetts reach its 2030 goal of reducing the amount of waste residents produce by 30%, said Kathy Mirza, the branch chief for municipal waste reduction programs at the State Department of Environmental Protection. There's an opportunity for more material to be delivered here and for the processing and capture of more valuable commodities than can be made into new products and packaging, Mirza said ahead of Tuesday's tour. Republic also upgraded the plant's safety systems while the site was closed, like adding a new fire system. Recycling is collected from Republic's contracted communities as far north as Cape Ann and as far south as the Boston area. Once at the plant, recycling is sorted and processed into bundles of like materials. The plastics collected are shipped out to the Indianapolis Polymer Center, where they are converted into recycled resins for sustainable packaging. The use of AI in the plant will not reduce the number of people working there, Skahan said. There are about 25 employees at the site currently. Machines still sorted recycling waste automatically prior to the renovation. Human sorters monitored for quality control, stepping in where there were materials that would damage the system or if materials needed to be sorted manually into the correct bins, operations manager Joe Ganna said. Now the AI technology knows how to more easily sort items by their material, color, shape, and weight, even detecting what type of plastics is moving through and reduces the need for human employees to correct issues. There's minimal sorting that they have to do now, really just get the odds and ends that are sneaking through the system, Ganna said. And if they see a lot that's coming through, then they can alert one of the managers or supervisors and we can go in and actually tweak the AI to capture what we're missing. At the end of the day, we still need people out there looking for things that the AI might miss. Not all the machines are entirely digital in nature. Magnets are still used to detect and suck up aluminum, Ganna said. These renovations will help improve services for local customers, Skahan said. Curbside recycling collection was severely delayed or even paused in these communities, including Danvers, Peabody, Beverly, Gloucester, Ipswich, and Manchester by the Sea, during an 81-day strike of Republic's union workers represented by the Teamsters over the summer. I talked to a lot of community members, a lot of the state officials around, and they are excited about this, Ganna said. I'm just happy that we can provide this service for our local communities. Lawmakers raise legal pot use limit. Massachusetts adults would be allowed to possess up to 2 ounces of cannabis for personal use, twice the current limit, under a proposed update to the state's recreational pot law headed for Governor Moore Healey's desk. The changes are included in a package of legislation aimed at improving state oversight of the maturing cannabis industry by streamlining the state agency that regulates growers, processors, and retailers. A 6-member legislative committee filed the compromise bill Monday after negotiators ironed out differences between the House and Senate versions of this legislation. Both chambers are expected to hold an up or down vote on the bill this week before sending it to Healey's desk for review. On behalf of our fellow conferees, we are pleased to announce that we have reached an agreement on legislation that charts a more promising path forward for cannabis regulation in our Commonwealth, the committee said in a statement. A key provision of the legislation would shrink the 5-member Cannabis Control Commission to a 3-member body, all of whom would be appointed by the governor. Under the current law, board members are appointed by the governor, attorney general, and state treasurer. It would also raise the state's limit on the number of retail pot licenses any individual or entity may hold from 3 to 6, with priority given to minority, women, and veteran-owned cannabis businesses. The bill also declares that cannabis delivery businesses can serve customers in any city or town unless that municipality prohibits pot businesses and opts out of the program. But the bill also calls for raising the legal limit of cannabis an adult can possess to 2 ounces. A summary of the legislation said it recognizes the fact that recreational cannabis use has been a common practice for more than 7 years. The bill increases the threshold from 2 ounces to 3 ounces that would incur a civil penalty or require participation in a drug awareness program for those under 18 caught with cannabis. The legal limit to buy cannabis is 21 years old. The move to overhaul the Cannabis Regulatory Board comes in response to demands from top state leaders who have cited dysfunction in the agency that has resulted in its failure to collect hundreds of thousands of dollars in licensing fees from retail pot shops. Lawmakers are also seeking to quell criticism from pot activists that the state's cannabis regulators haven't done enough to ensure the growth of so-called equity businesses founded by individuals who were disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. Meanwhile, a proposal to repeal the state's recreational pot law is inching toward the November 3rd ballot. The proposal, if approved, wouldn't recriminalize cannabis, but it would effectively dismantle the state's $1.6 billion recreational pot industry. Massachusetts voters legalized recreational cannabis through a ballot referendum in 2016, which passed with 53% of the vote. Recent polls have shown strong support for recreational pot in the state and nationally. Once lawmakers send the bill to Healey, she will have 10 days to sign it, veto it, or send it back to lawmakers with recommended amendments. Beverly Teen competes for national arts title. A ninth grader at Beverly High School is in the running to become America's most artistic kid and needs your vote to win. Emily Galvin Ross, 15, has made it to the quarterfinals of the Bob Ross America's Most Talented Kid Art Contest. She's currently in second place and has until Thursday to be bumped up to first, which you can help do by voting online at artistickid.org/2026/Emily-B142. The winner will get to display their artwork in the Minatrista Museum in Indiana, appear on a special episode of The Joy of Painting, and get $20,000. I decided a few years ago to take an art class where I discovered that I really enjoyed being creative and trying different mediums, she told the Salem News. I also love animals and the challenge of painting them. Art is a good distraction for me not to focus on what I am feeling in my body. Emily has complex regional pain syndrome, a chronic pain condition that also caused her to experience a neurological issue and recently confined her to a wheelchair for 2 years. She was able to walk again by the start of her freshman year at Beverly High School, where she will be inducted into the National Art Honor Society this week. It's been a long road, but art has really helped her to get through all this and have something that she's good at, something that motivates her, and something to distract her from the pain and what she's experiencing in her body, her mother, Jennifer Galvin Ross, said. It's been a great outlet for her. Acrylic paint is Emily's preferred medium. She especially enjoys painting animals and has created vibrant portraits of swans, hyraxes, rhinoceroses, tigers, bears, and more. She has also experimented with charcoal and graphite and has started drawing people too. Emily is often inspired by her uncle, who is an artist. Participants can give Emily one free vote a day or more by donating on her page to the charity Blood Cancer United. To vote for Emily or learn more about the contest, visit artistickid.org/2026/Emily-B142. The latest. Iran says it has accepted a 2-week ceasefire in the war. Iran's Supreme National Security Council said it has accepted a 2-week ceasefire in the war. Its statement said it would negotiate with the United States in Islamabad beginning Friday. It is emphasized that this does not signify the termination of the war, the statement said. Our hands remain upon the trigger, and should the slightest error be committed by the enemy, it shall be met with full force. U.S. President Donald Trump said he's pulling back on his threat to widen attacks on Iran. The president said that includes an array of bridges, power plants, and other civilian targets, subject to Iran being ready for a two-week ceasefire and to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Trump's latest threat over the Iran war hit a new extreme earlier Tuesday when he warned, "A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again, if Iran fails to make a deal that includes reopening the vital Strait of Hormuz." The Republican president's earlier comments were swiftly met with condemnation from Democrats, some Make America Great Again supporters who have since broken with Trump and the first American pope. Here's the latest. "There are concerns in Israel about ceasefire agreements," says AP source. That's according to a person familiar with the situation who spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not allowed to speak to the media. The person said Israel would like to achieve more in the war with Iran. Levitt says negotiations will continue. As for clarity on what Trump meant by the Iranian peace proposal being workable, White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt said, "President Trump's words speak for themselves. This is a workable basis to negotiate, and those negotiations will continue. The truth is that President Trump and our powerful military got Iran to agree to reopening the Strait of Hormuz, and the negotiations will continue," Levitt said in a statement. Oil prices plunge after Trump pulls back on threats to widen attacks. Futures for U.S. crude oil sank 18% to around $92.60, while Brent crude oil futures fell about 6% to $103.40. Both prices remain well above where they were at the start of the war. Futures for the Standard & Poor's 500 rose 2.4%. U.S. signaled to Israel that strikes were meant to show Iran what could come, officials said. Some Israeli officials had begun speculating as Trump neared his self-imposed deadline that he was edging toward finding an off-ramp, even as he offered increasingly menacing his rhetoric, according to persons privy to internal deliberations. The U.S. administration had signaled to Israelis that the strikes on military assets on Karg Island earlier Tuesday and the targeting of Iran's two main petrochemical hubs, Mashar and Aswala, were sending a clear message to Tehran of what would come if Trump chose to further intensify the bombardment, according to the person who requested anonymity to discuss the matter. Israeli officials were skeptical and believed the apparent breakthrough could unravel and lead to further escalation if the Iranians don't make good on quickly opening the Strait of Hormuz, the person added. U.S. military has halted all offensive operations against Iran, U.S. officials said. The official who spoke on condition of anonymity to describe sensitive military operations noted that defensive measures and operations would still be in effect. It comes after President Donald Trump announced a two-week ceasefire agreement with the Islamic Republic. White House doesn't immediately clarify what Trump meant by workable Iranian plan. The White House on Tuesday night did not answer messages on why the president's described Iran's 10-point peace plan as workable. Among the points communicated by Tehran were an easing of U.S. sanctions on Iran and the withdrawal of United States combat forces from all bases and points of deployment within the region. In his social media post announcing a postponement of his threatened bombing campaign, Trump wrote, "We received a 10-point proposal from Iran and believe it is a workable basis on which to negotiate." The White House did not immediately clarify what Trump meant or provide details on what a basis for future negotiations might entail. Missile alerts sound despite Iran and U.S. saying they've reached a ceasefire. Israel and the United Arab Emirates both sounded missile alerts early Wednesday despite Iran and the United States saying they had reached a two-week ceasefire in the war. It wasn't immediately clear what was being targeted in the two countries which bore the brunt of the missile and drone fire during the war. Throughout the war, Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard has called the shots in all decisions. Individual commanders have made decisions on what to strike and when, with the nation's political leadership sidelined. Whether they agreed to stop shooting with the declared ceasefire and negotiations being planned in Islamabad remained in question. However, many Mideast wars see combatants launch last-minute attacks to be able to claim victory with their populations. Also not clear what Iran means in referencing withdrawal of U.S. combat forces. In question is another point messaged by the Iranians, the withdrawal of United States combat forces from all bases and points of deployment within the region. The U.S. has maintained a network of military bases through the Persian Gulf for decades after the 1991 Gulf War with Iraq. The bases have served as the region's chief security guarantor and provided protection for the energy-rich Gulf Arab states. Iran did not define, however, what it meant by combat forces, potentially giving wiggle room for those bases to remain. But any step down in troop levels in the region likely would anger the Gulf Arab states that have suffered through weeks of war. Texas officials investigating hundreds of complaints against Camp Mystic amid license renewal bid. Texas health regulators told Camp Mystic's owners Tuesday they are investigating hundreds of complaints following last year's devastating floods that killed 27 girls as the state considers whether to allow the all-girls camp to reopen this summer. The Texas Rangers are also helping look into allegations of neglect, according to the Texas Department of Safety, although the scope of the state's elite investigations unit was not immediately clear. The investigations underscore the hurdles facing Camp Mystic as it pushes ahead with reopening plans over the outrage of the families of the 25 girls and two teenage counselors who died in the July 4th floods. More than 850 families have signed up to return to the Christian all-girls camp this summer if it is allowed to reopen a portion of the camp that did not flood. The Department of State Health Services said that since February, the agency has received hundreds of complaints regarding Camp Mystic's operations in the summer of 2025, alleging violations of state laws governing youth camps. The agency said it asked for help from state police. The Texas Department of Public Safety said the Texas Rangers joined an investigation regarding complaints of neglect during the flood. Neither agency released details. The camp did not evacuate and was hit hard when the river rose from 14 feet to 29.5 feet within 60 minutes before dawn. A letter sent Tuesday from the health agency to the camp owners informed them of the agency's investigation but made no mention of the Texas Rangers being involved. Lawyers for the families of the girls who were killed and the Camp Mystic owners did not immediately respond to email messages requesting comment. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick called the Texas Rangers' involvement a criminal investigation and said the state should not grant the camp a license to reopen until that probe and another one by state lawmakers are complete. I urge you to prioritize safety and do everything in your power to ensure Camp Mystic and or their operators are not allowed to operate until the facts are in, Patrick wrote in a letter Tuesday to the head of the health agency. Families of several of the girls who died have sued the camp's operators, arguing that camp officials failed to take necessary steps to protect the campers as life-threatening floodwaters approached. A district judge last month ordered the camp owners to preserve damaged cabins and other parts of the grounds in the flooded area as the lawsuits proceed. The body of one of the campers killed, 8-year-old Celie Stewart, has not yet been recovered. DPS officials said the search for the girl continues. Richard Eastland, one of the camp owners, was also killed. All told, the destructive flooding killed at least 136 people along a several-mile stretch of the river, raising questions about how things went so terribly wrong. Salem to celebrate anniversary of Leslie's retreat. The city will honor the 251st anniversary of Leslie's retreat this Friday, with the dedication of a new monument commemorating the significant historical moment leading up to the beginning of the American Revolutionary War. The dedication ceremony, to take place at the corner of Lind and North Streets in Salem at 3 p.m., will feature remarks from local historians and community leaders. The Salem Gunpowder Raid of February 26, 1775, known locally as Leslie's Retreat, was a significant moment in the country's revolutionary history, in which local militia and citizens prevented 240 British troops led by Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Leslie from seizing hidden colonial cannons. The city has recognized it as the country's first armed resistance to the royal authority. Parking for the event is available at Murphy Funeral Home at 85 Federal Street. After the event, coffee will be available at Wesley United Methodist Church at 8 North Street. Salem State hosting exhibit and guest talk on society's relationships with seals. Salem State University is hosting a two-week exhibit exploring the lives of seals in the region's coastal ecosystem and the evolving relationship they've had with humans, including a guest talk by seal scientist Andrea Bogomolny this Thursday. The Seals and Society traveling exhibit is being hosted in the lobby of the university's Frederick E. Berry Library and Learning Commons from April 6th to 17th. The exhibit explores the ways in which the relationship between gray and harbor seals and human society has shifted over time, as perceptions toward them have ranged from positive for the ecosystem and tourism to problematic for the fishing industry. The exhibit provides both a natural history of seals and information on their ecological role and their role in society, looking at how they were perceived by indigenous people throughout history and to today, said Jennifer Jackman, a professor of politics, policy, and international relations at Salem State. It was first launched at the New Bedford Whaling Museum and has been traveling around New England ever since. We are delighted to have the opportunity to share this important exhibit with our campus and the North Shore community. A guest talk titled Sharing the Shores, Seals, Science, and Society will take place Thursday, midway into the exhibit. The talk, also a part of Salem State's Earth Days Week, will host Bogomolny, a seal scientist, chairperson of the Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium, and co-creator of the exhibit. Humans have intertwined in the lives of seals for millennia, Bogomolny said. We hope that this exhibit brings a better understanding into the lives of these animals and our relationships, past and present, to inspire and to foster coexistence into the future. The exhibit and talk are hosted by the university's Bates Center for Public and Global Affairs, the Politics, Policy, and International Relations Departments, and the Geography and Sustainability Department. The Library and Learning Commons Library is open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to midnight, Saturday 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Sunday 9 a.m. to midnight. The Sharing the Shores talk is set for 12:15 to 1:30 p.m. in the MLK Junior Room in Ellison Campus Center, located next to the library. For more information on the exhibit, visit the Seals and Society website at sealsandsociety.com.